brought to you by Penguin. The Modern Fairies by Claire Pollard. Read by Catherine Drysdale.
Chapter 1. The Tale of Donkey Skin, Part 1.
There was once an omnipotent king. Perhaps some said the most powerful ruler there had ever been. They said too, of course they did, that he managed to be both just in peacetime and in wartime utterly terrifying. His subjects were completely content, whilst his enemies shuddered with fear. And this king had, of course he had, the most charming and beautiful wife imaginable, and their little gal was the most darling little doll. Really, one might say that their lives were perfect.
So Charles Perrault begins to tell the tale of Donkey Skin. So, too, we begin our story. In Madame d'Aulnoy's salon, Perrault's small audience sit forward keenly in their seats to hear what inevitable disaster will strike this faultless family. For the energy that lies behind all stories is a destructive energy, the urge to burn down what is or what might be. It is late autumn in the late 17th century, in the time of the reign of Louis XIV. The gathering is in a fine room on the Rue Saint-Benoît in Paris, snugly luxurious with heavy, embroidered, coral-coloured brocade. Candles dance close to every hem. Earlier, Charles Perrault was introduced to various members of the elite intellectual crowd who have been meeting here regularly for the purpose of sharing what, at this time, are still largely known as Mother Goose Tales. Although some know them as Tales of the Stork, or even Donkey Skin Tales. Or perhaps you know them by the newer name, Conte de Fées, or Fairy Tales. Well, it is Madame d'Aulnoy herself who has coined this term and, in the process, made quite a craze of them. Though Charles is usually good at people's names, scanning around again, he realizes a couple have slipped his mind already. There is his cousin, Marie-Jeanne Lheritier de Villandon, ardent and a touch pious, who he cannot help but like, though he is also slightly wary of the manner in which her ordinary face so shines with good intentions. His cousin is his point of entry into this circle, thinking to be the one to lift his present gloom. She has asked that he call her Telesil within this context. It has become the fashion to have a salon name, and hers is after a Greek poet who led women into battle, something that he finds mildly preposterous, but is trying to remember in politeness. Looking around, he can also see one of the king's illegitimate daughters, the Princesse de Conti, who always sits forward with the easy casualness of wealth, as though her legs are open beneath her skirts. A clear-skinned blonde with a strong jaw, she wears no wig or makeup, is attractive, but in the manner of a dashing young prince rather than a princess. She smokes tobacco rakishly from a pipe. Wealthy heiress, Madame Angélique Tiquet, he recognizes at once. She sprawls loosely in the soft chair at the left, wearing a pink shepherdess's frock rummaged out of the salon's fancy dress box, having acted along to an earlier tale, and is still holding her crook like a scepter. Angélique Tiquet is the sort of woman who spills from every dress that she wears despite her age. Sugar crystals bedeck the corners of her sumptuous mouth, with its rotten front tooth. She has a white cat with a jewelled collar that she often carries under her arm. There, too, is a rare man who has been allowed into the circle. Abbé Cotin, a mediocre clergyman and scribbler known for his tedious sonnets. Beside him, her
sample complete. Ready to continue?